The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Welcome to Where Did the Road Go, and I'm your host, Soraya, as always. And tonight we have something a little different than I think we've done before. We're going to be talking about energy and ways to calculate it. We have as our guest Tom Blasco. You know what? I'm gonna let you say it, Tom. What's your last name?
Tom Blasco.
Blasco. Okay, that's what I was going to say, but I didn't want to, you know, destroy it. Your book is Calculating Soul Connections, A Deeper Understanding of Human Relationships. And from my own vantage point in reading this, I've had a lot of experiences with spontaneous kundalini and other forms of energy that are pretty undeniable when you experience them. And you've taken this and kind of tried to make it a little more scientific, tried to come up with ways of measuring this sort of spiritual energy, hoping that maybe some people will understand it who haven't experienced it. Am I on that pretty good?
Well, there were a couple of things that I was trying to do. I've had a couple experiences myself. I've done a lot of martial arts. I've been doing that since 1970. And they talk about qi there. If you're mm-hmm. Chinese, they talk about qi, but it's the same kind of thing. And I was going, how can you explain that? Oh, and I've seen a ghost. So it was, you know, it was my uncle. He came to me when he died. He came by just after, you know, he died and said goodbye. Kind of waved to me. I didn't say anything, but he just waved to me and kind of disappeared off some other direction. And I went, what was that? Cause I didn't recognize him, but something showed up. And my brother called about it. My brother called about an hour later and said, Uncle Malcolm died. And I said, oh yeah, he came and said goodbye. So I, you know, that and a whole bunch of other stuff that kind of interested me all along. I was going to try to say, how can we fit this into the world that we live in, which is basically, you know, the three dimensions and times, the 4D universe, ordinary reality, and was hoping I could come up with some way to fit all those pieces together. That was kind of the goal of the book.
And I think in the beginning you sort of, you do a little more of the mathematical type of stuff. There's a lot of mathematical formulas in here, and you break everything down, and then you kind of give it the full theory at the end.
Yeah, I was, well, you know, I wrote this book because I was curious if I could come up with an explanation that worked, that I would agree with. I've seen a lot of explanations. I go, well, this doesn't make sense to me. So I was trying to see what I could come up with. And it required the math. It required all the pieces. It required, you know, a lot of what's really going on in this kind of detail area of the soul or of the life force or whatever, all the pieces that, and how do they all fit together? So yeah, I put the math in. I wrote the book so that people could read it and skip the math. I, you know, the math is not required, but somebody who is interested in it from a more scientific, technical, I want to try this out and see if it really, he's got anything here that can be tested, which there are, could read it and actually make tests on it. And other people could read it and go, yeah, this is interesting. I've had this kind of experience in my life. And, well, it sort of fits in here.
Okay. All right. Want to give people a little bit about your background?
Sure. I talked about martial arts. I do karate, Shotokan karate, with a man called Tsutomu Oshima, who's has a pretty powerful life force, a lot of energy. I went to Caltech and studied astronomy, so I have a bachelor's in astronomy. I wasn't a terrific student, but I was okay. I passed. I graduated. You know, I don't claim much of my scientific background. I got friends that do the math and the physics much better than I do. So I, you know, if I have questions in that area, I go and talk to them and see if I can hold my own in the conversation. Usually, mostly I can, but they're places where, you know, they're graduate level guys. They know more.
Right.
It's like, we all have specialties. I studied psychology. I have a master's in developmental psychology. So I kind of understand how people develop. This was, you know, I was kind of, the astronomy didn't really grab me. The psychology grabbed me a little bit more. But it still really wasn't what I was looking for. And I don't know if I really found what I'm looking for yet. I really like publishing books. It's what I do now. But there's no the kind of study stuff. There's nothing I really want to study deeply. So I've written this book, you know, Calculating Soul Connections, which is a fairly deep study of souls, which is a big strain for me. What I was really looking at was there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that deals with this kind of area where you can't explain it with physics that we use today. There are four forces. You know the four forces?
Right.
Yes. Yeah, there's gravity, just in case somebody else doesn't. Gravity, there's electromagnetism, there's a strong nuclear force, there's a weak nuclear force. That's it. So anything you want to explain from a scientific, Western kind of scientific point of view has to be explained through those four forces. And you know what? Ghosts don't fit.
No.
You can't explain them. Martial arts stuff, ki doesn't fit. All of the healing stuff, like Reiki and the healing touch, doesn't fit. There's got to be something else going on besides those four forces. So, what I really do better than I do deep study is to look at a broad range of things and say, how does this all fit together? How are all these pieces connected? What's similar between them? What way can I look at one of those pieces like Reiki, and I look at another piece like ghosts and say, do those fit together? And the answer is, yeah, they do kind of in some sort of strange way. There's energy being transferred. There are probably entities being involved, like a ghost is an entity. We're an entity. We interact with that. The Reiki person is an entity and interacting with, well, me when I'm getting healed. So it's, what's the simplest way? What's the smallest amount we can add to our body of knowledge, our way of thinking about the world, and explain a whole bunch more stuff? And that's what I wrote.
Okay. Well, you start out talking a lot about... Oh, actually, you went to did the psychology master's in Buffalo, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Yeah, not too far from here.
Yeah, yeah.
And where are you located now?
I'm in the Seattle area.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I can see Mount Rainier from my window.
Oh, nice. Nice. So kind of a high-energy spot on top of that.
Well, I'm a little farther away from Mount Rainier, so it's not... So, yeah, it's kind of an energy place, but it's kind of calm here. Hmm. I'm not really fond of being in high energy places. I know that sounds kind of silly, but not my style. I just rather kind of sit and contemplate and not worry about dealing with all the energy forces.
Now, of course, your typical debunker will just say that none of this stuff is real, so you don't need another force.
Of course.
But anyone who's, and I think it really comes down to life experience. If you've experienced it, you know you've experienced it, and you know, you can't dismiss it that easily unless you're very good at denial.
Strikingly true. And people are very good at denial. People have had experiences. I've talked with them, you know, within an hour or two after something happened, and two or three days later, they don't remember it. It's all gone. Not in their conscious mind at all. It's striking how well we get rid of stuff that we don't want to remember or doesn't fit in with our way of thinking about things. Yeah. My psychology background tells me that that's very normal in all sorts of things, and you know, not just this non-ordinary reality stuff. It's true for any kind of experience.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's just. Society blocks out these non-ordinary things as being ridiculous. They're not real. So it's much easier, I think, for some people to block them out when they do occur.
Absolutely. Some people don't even see them.
True.
You know, it's... I actually... Would you like kind of an example of this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Rupert Sheldrake has done an experiment called The Sense of Being Stared At. I'm sure you know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the basis of the experiment is somebody... is standing or sitting behind you, and there's some kind of timer that goes off, and for 10 seconds the person behind stares at the person in front or doesn't stare. There are two possibilities, either staring or not staring. The person in front writes down, was I being stared at during this time period? And you do it for a set of 10 or 20 or whatever, but you know, some small set of stares. And the results from that are that people, when they're not being stared at, are pretty much random. They can't tell that they are or they aren't. And when they're being stared at, the average is about 60% of the time you can tell you're being, when you are being stared at, 60% of the time you're right. You think you are. 40% of the time you're wrong. And you think you're not when you really are. And so on the average, people can sense it a little bit. They're not terrific at it, but they can sense it a little bit.
Right. And some people are better than others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some senders are better than others, and some receivers are better than others. So here's the story. I don't remember who it was that was debunking it. One of the fellows over in PsyCop said, I'm going to run this experiment, and I'm going to test this out and see if it works. So they set up the experiment, and they were running along with it, and they had a sender, and they had a receiver, and you know what? They were finding it was working. They were getting slightly positive results, slightly above, you know, better than chance results for sending. So whoever it was that was running the experiment said, okay, sender, go away. I'm going to sit down and be the sender from now on. And from that point on, it was random. Is that a surprise?
No, not really.
So my thought on this is, what was going on was about the same as if I take a flashlight and I'm shining it in your eyes, and sometimes the flashlight is on and sometimes it's off, and you're asked whether it's on or off, whether the switch is pressed or not. Pretty simple experiment. You can tell really well, except this guy went in and took the bulb out of the flashlight. So, you know, forgive me. The joke on this is there was a dim bulb doing the sending and it didn't work. So this guy saw, you know, we're talking about denying it. This guy was in the room. He saw it working, and he was so serious about denying it that he had to change the experiment and change it so it wouldn't work. He chose to do that. So that was his conscious decision. Others of us, you know, including me, by the way, have experiences that they're just sort of outside the realm of what we are willing to accept. And so if we don't work really, really hard to remember them, we don't. My uncle's ghost was like that. You know, I forgot about that for a time.
Really?
Yeah. It was, when something happened, I remembered, oh wait, I was when I was writing, you know, early on writing the process of the book, I wanted to write down a couple experiences I had. I was trying to think, well, what experiences have I had? And I came up with the martial arts because I do that, you know, basically every day.
Right.
But I didn't remember that, you know, I'd seen my uncle's ghost.
Hmm.
And so sometime later on, somebody said something about ghosts, and my mind went blink, you know, and went, wait, I remember it now. And so I went and, you know, I actually went and typed it into the machine either the first or second time I re-remembered it, so I wouldn't forget it again. It was, you know, electronically stored.
Right.
But it's outside of the reality we live in. And it's really important that we stay in our, you know, our ordinary reality most of the time.
It's a survival thing.
Tiger in the jungle, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we don't pay attention to the tiger that's really there, it's going to eat us. If we don't pay attention to the cars in the road, they're going to run into us, or we're going to run into them.
Well, sure. So I want to talk a little bit about the chakras. And now there's always debate on whether or not chakras really exist. There have been some experiments I'm aware of that where they've had monks meditating and they've been able to detect energy around the areas of the chakra. But does that mean that they're actually there, or the monks are creating them where they believe they are?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. I will say I don't know the answer. I've not studied chakras anywhere the depth that these monks have studied them. You know, some of them say they see swirling vortexes. Some of them say they see flowers blossoming or blooming, you know, with petals that have particular colors on them.
Mm-hmm.
The Western people say, oh, I'm seeing a purple glow up in the top chakra, and a red glow, you know, someplace, and a yellow glow someplace else. And it's like, I think these are all, whatever is there, I think these are all ways that we translate something in non-ordinary reality, in spirit reality, into our ordinary reality terms. We're making them real in some sense for us, in ordinary reality, by giving them some kind of characteristic that we can speak of very easily to somebody else. You know, it's easy to say a flower with petals. We understand that. It's easy to say a little vortex, a little eddy, you know, like the water running down the drain, or, you know, or a tornado, depending on how powerful it is. It's easy to say that, and people get it. But I don't think there's anything like that. I don't think that's it. You know, if you read the book, you'll see I say, nah, there's no space, there's no length, there's no time, there's no, you know, you can't measure how long something is happening. You can't measure how far away you are from somebody in any kind of physical way. It's just a whole different thing. So to answer your question, yes, they exist. They exist in non-ordinary reality from my point of view. And I believe the monks are creating them in the spots where the monks believe they are.
Okay. And you have different, you talk briefly about other systems that have similar things to chakras, but they're set up differently.
Yeah, the one I really love is the Inca shamans. You know, I said I'm a publisher. I published two books now. One is out and one's coming out soon on the lessons of the Inca shamans. And they they talk about mind, heart, and belly. And so, you know, that's the mind chakra. That's obvious. Heart chakra is the same, and belly chakra, I would say, is the same as the will chakra that the Buddhists or the Hindus talk about.
And the focus on the navel of so many ancient cultures might be related to this as well.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So there's, in the version you're using the basic seven chakras.
I've borrowed the idea. Yeah. I look at them differently, as I'm saying. For me, they're just regions. I don't see them as little chunks of something sitting in the middle of your body, in your pineal gland or whatever, or your heart or something like that. I think about it as the big amorphous fog kind of thing that has its own structure or whatever of the way it decides to work, and surrounding it.
You got that kind of demonstrated on the cover too.
Yeah. That's kind of my thought on that. And one other difference I have that's I haven't seen anyplace else is I don't think the top one and the bottom were actually in us. I think they reach up into, the top one reaches up into some kind of a spirit realm. And if there's a region or center up there, that's probably, I can't tell. I don't know. It's whatever it is, but it's connecting with, you know, spirits and gods and things. And the bottom one, you know, they talk about the root chakra, and I think they're exactly right, but I think it's a tree root kind of thing where it's dipping down into this energy area down there. You know, up and down, of course, have no sense in the spirit world, but for me, that's the way I think about it in ordinary reality. So I'm dipping down into the energy realm and picking up energy from there that powers all the chakras that I have.
Okay, and you want to tell people what each chakra does?
Sure.
You can start at the top, I guess, and go down?
Oh, I can start at the top or the bottom. Which would you prefer?
Start at the top.
All right, start at the top. So top is the spirit chakra. Up there where we're dealing with angels and demons and whatever. And I think it's, you know, we get it. Oh, actually, I want to say one other thing first.
Go ahead.
I think there are two parts to life force. This is kind of relevant to that. I'm not sure I made this absolutely clear in the book. It's kind of in there, but I've kind of refined it a little since. So there's information and there's energy that the life force affects. So the life force, when it moves from you to me, can transmit energy to you, so you feel stronger about doing something, you like me better, or whatever energy it is. but I can also transmit, in the same life force as I'm doing right now, information. And the chakras are interesting, and they're kind of divided up so that the ones with the most energy are on the bottom. And the one on the bottom is just dealing with energy. The ones that deal with the information are on the top, in the way I've got it structured. So that the spirit chakra is pretty much all energy. us humans, we don't have, all information inspiration, music of the spheres, whatever else you have there, that's just, wow, this thing is just overwhelming. You know, we get in this state where we go, I've seen it all now. Some people don't get there, but a lot of people have that experience, at least briefly.
Right, that sense of total enlightenment, connection to everything type of thing.
Exactly right. And I think we have no energy there at all. None. Some other creature out there more powerful than us, they've got energy there, but we don't. We're pretty much energyless there.
Hmm.
So the next one down is the mind. And among other things, the mind takes that inspiration and tries to put it into symbols and other ways of representing it so that we can store it in our mind, store it in something that we can hold on to, because we're not inspired all the time.
Right.
So the mind has senses, including the third eye, consciousness, which Zen calls a sixth sense. I think that's actually a good way to describe it. Thoughts and memories and storing information up there is all done in the mind. Let me take a break here and say, I think all the regions have their own particular types of memories, and I think they store their own. But the thing we talk about when we talk about memory most of the time is what's in the mind. You know, I remember going to the store yesterday and buying this and that. Yeah, that's a mind thing. The other thing the mind does, well, it connects with the brain. I think the brain is a physical thing. I think the mind is a spirit reality thing. I think they connect together. I think we as humans developed brains as so that we could do a lot of really great calculations that I'm not sure the spirits can do. I think we are developing things here on this earth that improve our spirit abilities.
It could also be kind of a translator for spirit to the physical.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly right. If we want to, you know, something created this physical world we have around here, random chance or God or whoever, it doesn't matter to me very much because I'm in it. I like it. and you know, darn, you know, I was out mowing the grass today, and I would have a lot of trouble mowing the grass with just my mind. It is so darn much easier to have a lawnmower that somebody built for me, and you know, I can push it around. I've got hands that can guide where it goes. So I think we developed these bodies for a reason, because they're kind of fun. If you don't like mowing the lawn, well, pick something else, you know. But I was enjoying myself. So the mind is the part that connects with the brain, and I think to a certain extent, you know, the brain really does control the body pretty much. I don't think that, you know, the heart chakra controls the heart to a large degree. There might be some connection, but mostly the mind and the senses and the, you know, the nerves and stuff, that's all the way the mind and the brain and the body kind of connect up together. That's my thought. People have different thoughts, and I just go, yeah, okay, let's talk about it. There are lots of ways to look at it.
Okay, and then we move down another chakra.
Right, communication. This is the one where, well, we communicate. I'm taking the thoughts from my brain and saying them to you. And that's you know, I can't say everything that is in my head, but I can do the best I can to communicate. The energy parts are opening pathways for feelings and thoughts. So just opening up, just trying to make a pathway between us so that the communication will actually get information from me to you. The communication part, you know, it doesn't communicate just stuff from the mind. We also communicate from the heart. We also communicate from the will. The words are much simpler from those. We'll talk about that in a second. But we do that kind of communication through, you know, speech or music or art or, you know, painting or whatever. I think those are all kind of related together. And my thought on this is, you know, communication is the dominant region of the current age.
Hmm.
There's, you know, I'm not sure that we remember to put heart into it. I'm not sure we remember to put thinking and wisdom into it. I think perhaps we just are so busy making communications that, well, it's we're losing the other things. Personal bias.
I can totally see that, though.
We need the communication. We need that.
Yeah.
But But if that's all that's going on, then it's not everything. I was having a conversation last night about cat videos on YouTube.
And
cats doing funny things.
Yeah.
This is an example of the communication being there, but not much content of any kind.
True.
And people spend a lot of time looking at cat videos, so it's like, yeah.
Yes, they do.
And I'm not sure that's the best use of our time. So communication is the dominant of the age. Cat videos are my symbol for the communication being dominant. And it's sort of the perhaps if we look at ourselves, we can think of other things that are possible to do with what we do. So this is my political thing. I do to every once in a while and say, let's think hard and let's use some brains when we're thinking about how to deal with other people as opposed to just talk to them. Shall we go on to the heart?
Yes, let's move down to the heart chakra.
Okay, so this is affiliation with other people, love, friendship, all those kinds of things. The way we work, we connect with other people through the heart. We don't connect so well with the communication part, but the heart actually makes communication and makes feelings connected between sets of people. I've found that if you want somebody to understand what you are saying, if you say it with heart energy involved too, in other words, you're saying we're in this together, they understand it better. And so I try and put that in my conversations at least some of the time, so that there is an affiliation. The words that the heart has more simple words. They're like, I love you. We're in this together. If you're speaking words from the heart, you're speaking words that talk about connection between you and somebody else. So that's kind of my thought about the one part of the heart, and then this other part, which I find just totally fascinating, which I call the eight superpowers. I got this from Susan Shumsky, who writes a lot of pretty good stuff. I like their stuff about chakras and things. And the eight superpowers are the ability to transform your body to the size of an atom, the power to decrease your physical weight to levitate, the power to increase your bodily size or stature, or become mighty, the capacity to fulfill desires and go anywhere at will, ability to pass through earth, walk through solid walls, not be immersed in water, and to assume any desired form, dominion over the five elements and the subtle sense objects, whatever they are. I didn't know that one. And also the power to attract and enslave others by enchantment. I do like that one.
that is similar, but a little bit different than the Shaktis, I think they're called.
Yes, I think that's right. Mastery over the appearance, disappearance, and aggregation of the five elements and objects in the material world, and then the ability to discriminate the five elements in their nature and to transform them at will. So there's all these things. When I read this the first time, I thought of Carlos Castaneda.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stuff he talks about, and it's just. Are these powers there? Are these powers not there? I can't do them. I don't know. But people say they can, and some people, do things where it looks like they might be doing them. And so I go, yeah, okay. So this is in the heart. There you go.
I've always had issue with Castaneda. I really like his stuff, but I think there's enough evidence that he may have just accumulated it and not actually experienced it.
I just don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Neither do I. And I can say that if he did just accumulate it, if he just, wrote it up based on stuff he was researching, he did an excellent job and the stuff does work.
Right.
But there's at least enough doubt there that he was actually doing the things and that Don Juan ever actually existed.
So I know I've read some of the evidence against him and I go, yeah, this is really, really damning evidence, except that... if he has this energy in the heart, then he has the ability to pass through earth, walk through solid walls, and go anywhere at will. So he could be at two places at once. So I don't know. How can you tell? I at one point actually thought about going and trying to meet him. We were kind of in the same area. I was in Southern California. He was at UCLA, and I never had the bravery to do it. Huh. I probably would have run into it.
And I feel that either way, it doesn't discredit what he wrote in the sense that it's still valuable.
Absolutely right. That's right. What he wrote was so much of it was just really on the mark. Whether he really ran around the walls of that room and, you know, whichever one that was, fourth or fifth book, I don't know. I've had experiences like that kind of, but it's not an ordinary reality thing. It's a spirit reality thing.
Right,
and
yes.
so it's what, how can you decide? How can you figure out whether it's real or not? You know, and what do you mean by reality? So,
well, yeah, that's a good question.
So you doubt it. I go, yeah, I think he was writing about stuff that he experienced. I think he had enough there that was clear. And if I'm going to go along with the people who are discrediting him, I'm going to say he lied about where it happened and when it happened, but not about what happened.
Okay. All right. Let's move down to the will chakra.
Okay. So this is leadership, domination. I'm going to decide you're going to do something. Information is like a command. You will do this. I mean, that's the kind of word you get out. It's a control of things outside the soul. You're not working with somebody like you do in the heart. You're forcing them to do something. You're forcing an opinion on them. You're forcing them to do some kind of action you want them to do. I think Hitler was really, really good at this.
Hmm.
This is kind of his connection to the German people was through the will chakra. If you want to, you know, take a look at what he was doing, his communication was very good. But what he was communicating was will, and the German people, you know, were in a really bad state at the time, and they bought into we want to get our will back. We want to make our decisions. We want to have the world be the way we want it to be, which are all will kinds of things. And he just you know, caught the zeitgeist of that, and everybody kind of went along with him. But you know, I'm just proposing the connection there was through the will.
Right. Okay, and let's move down to desire.
Well, one more thing on the will, the martial arts. That's what, you know, that's what they use too when they're fighting. If they're you're trying to dominate an opponent, so it's a will kind of thing.
And that's a solar plexus area.
It is. I mean, tanden is the word that we use in Japanese. I don't remember the word in Chinese. So yeah, that's, you know, they talk about a particular area of the body, and I'm saying that the kind of sense the region is there too. So that's it all kind of matches together. I mean, I don't think that if the soul is matching up to the body somehow, I don't think it's doing it stupidly. I think it's getting in areas that make sense for it. If we're going to, you know, the martial artists, even the ones that don't think much of ki, talk about the hips region as being the center of the body and where the power comes from. And yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Okay. Well, let's move down one to desire.
So that's like where you say things like, I want.
Right.
I want food. I want sleep. I want love. If you look at Maslow and his hierarchy of desires, hierarchy of needs, his lower level are mostly desires. Remember, I was a psychologist, so I pull in the psychology stuff as I go along here.
That's fine.
You had a guest on a couple weeks ago who talked about Wilhelm Reich.
Yes, Peter Robbins.
Yes. Reich's orgone energy. This is it. He's doing the next one down, the chaos or the energy chakra and the desire chakra. That's what Reich was talking about. He fits in with this too. I mean, that's what I really like about this. You know, he had some very strange stuff he was talking about with energy being able to, you know, change clouds, right?
Right.
So you know, he's pulling energy from someplace that's not ordinary reality. He's wanting the energy to show up and do something with it. And he's using his will through this. Well, he built a machine to do it. But, you know, there are several people that have built machines that they kind of use as crutches to help them channel energy. And so it's fine. I mean, that's how he did it. But he was using his will at some point to get the energy to go to the up to the clouds.
Sure. Well, I mean, that was just one of the things he built based on the energy he discovered, which he felt infested all of life.
Absolutely true. I call it life force. People call it chi. He called it orgone energy. Right. It's there. Absolutely. Same thing. That's right. I'm totally with that. That's kind of what I liked about, I actually read about Reich when I was in college. This is 40 years ago. Mm. I was going, this guy's really got something here. And so, his book is still sitting on the shelf in my bedroom there. So I absorb energy from it every once in a while.
Nice. And, so that brings us down to chaos.
Yeah. I'm thinking to change the name of this. I bounced back and forth and decided on chaos for the book. I think maybe I'm going to call it energy chakra instead of chaos. Because it's where where we connect to all the energy. People call it a root chakra. And, mm-hmm. and as I said earlier, it's like the tree root. Actually, I think we're absorbing energy. And I think if our root chakras are clever enough, the pieces of it, whatever the rootlets are, they can decide, oh, I want this good energy because I'm going to power this good feeling with somebody else. Or, they're the other guys out there. Oh, I want this bad energy, this negative energy because I'm going to destroy somebody over here. Okay. And we pick that up through the root chakra. There are no words in this region. Again, this is not inside our body. It's outside our body. It's someplace where all the energy sits, and we can get it and use it for powering the other chakras.
And you also connect it to Jung's collective unconscious.
I did in the book, and if you don't mind my asking you a question, did that make sense to you, or is Jung's collective unconscious actually the spirit stuff up on the top chakra?
It might be a combination of both.
Yeah, I think Jung was mixing some things up there. I've got several places where I've talked with some people who actually have studied Jung more seriously than I have, and they're going, yeah. Who understand the chakra model. Actually, one is Deborah Bryant, who's a Jungian psychologist who did the lessons of the Inca Shaman. And she's going, yeah, Jung has some issues that he didn't quite get to all of the things that make them all clear. So yes, I think that's right, that he's, I think probably some of both.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got to take a quick 45-second break. We will be right back with Tom Blaskow.
Blasco.
Blasco. I was so close.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, links section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
And we're talking tonight with Tom Blaskow. Did I get it right?
Oh, it's close enough.
Right. I don't know why I'm having such trouble with your last name.
I can tell you, I can solve this for you.
Yes.
Leave out the letters you don't like.
So Blaskow?
There you go.
All right. And the book is Calculating Soul Connections, A Deeper Understanding of Human Relationships. And one of the things I want to talk to you about, you were talking about memories a lot in here and how memories are stored. And one of the most interesting examples of how memories may not be stored in the brain is the caterpillar butterfly transition.
Okay.
Do you want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah, I can talk about that. My understanding of the experiment, I borrowed this from somebody else, and I actually looked it up briefly. They trained a caterpillar to avoid a particular kind of odor. So that you can train caterpillars, apparently. That was kind of amazing to me to start with.
Yeah, no kidding.
We all saw Alice in Wonderland, but that's not the same caterpillar. So apparently, they can train a caterpillar. If it smells something, it stays away from it. 'Cause I don't know what they were doing. I believe they were shocking it or something like that. Hmm. But it doesn't really matter. What matters is when the caterpillar goes into the cocoon and transforms into a butterfly, basically everything in the caterpillar's body breaks down. There are no nerves. There are no, there are no cells that have any kind of structure at all. And they all get rebuilt again into a butterfly. And so the point is, people say, oh, it's really wonderful that the memory of the caterpillar, the brain of the caterpillar, whatever that is, can manage to remember this through being a cocoon. It's like, well, no, there's no nerve structure to remember this. It's all gets rebuilt again with a whole different, cells are all put together again in different ways. So it's really hard to imagine anything getting through the transition that can remember in an ordinary reality, brain-oriented way. But still, the butterfly stays away from that particular odor.
Hmm. And that's really fascinating.
I know. There's just so many things out there that are just wonderful examples of, well, your biology doesn't work as well as you think it does.
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And I also found it interesting that what seem to be two of your biggest influences in this book are people I respect a lot, and that's Rupert Sheldrake and Patrick Harper.
Oh, yes.
And you talk a lot about some of Sheldrake's ESP experiments and things like that. We've already discussed the sense of being stared at.
Yes.
And some of his other experiments that just show that there's some kind of other energy going on that informs people and communicates over distances, no matter how far away they are.
People and dogs, too.
Yes, yeah. And I remember his whole thing with James Randi, where James Randi claimed to have replicated his dog experiments and got no correlation whatsoever. And when he was actually forced to show his data, he admitted he didn't actually have any data, and he just watched a friend's dog for a couple hours.
Well, this is kind of like the sense of being stared at experiment that I talked about earlier, where they turned the light bulb off.
Yeah.
I have two thoughts on that, one of which will probably get me in some trouble. So I'll say it as gently as I can. One is James Randi did not do careful research. He wanted to debunk things and say they didn't exist, and he was very good at that. And I have a great deal of respect for that man. He is brilliant in his way, and what he is doing is very good work. I just don't like what he's doing. But he does it really well. And the second thought is, this is one that I could say it so it won't get me in trouble, I think. He is a negative life force guy.
Oh, yeah.
He if you have a nice positive life force thing going, you want to communicate with your buddy over across the room and give them some kind of, ESP-ish sort of thing. You want to give them information. You want them to know you're staring at them. Randi is good enough to just blow that out of the water. He's 20 times more powerful than the average person in this world. Maybe more, I don't know. But he's an incredibly intense, strong individual. You want something that can make non-ordinary reality disappear from around you for a while? Go sit next to him. It's gone.
But I remember Sheldrake being pretty mildly amused, but also upset because he had gotten this data published refuting all of Sheldrake's very scientific work on whether or not dogs could sense their owners coming home. And, Randi just gets this thing published with no data to back it up.
Well, he's got his own set of publications.
Yeah, and that's part of it.
It's not hard, but they're legitimate, peer-reviewed publications.
Well, this clearly just wasn't.
No, I think probably it was. They're just Randi's peers.
Fair enough. All right. Do you want to talk a little bit about twins and the connection between twins and their energy?
I can. I'm not. It's not a tremendously, it's not my favorite topic, but yeah, let's do that. It gets into some other stuff I've talked about that's really interesting. We have lots of ways that we make connections with other people. That's one of the points I make in the book. The kind of the whole second half has that. And one of the important connection pieces is how many experiences we've shared in common with somebody else. And so twins, obviously, you know, have shared more experiences through, you know, than with their twin than with anybody else, and they're more common experiences. And it's just we just make connections that way. One of the points I make in the book that I guess I haven't just talked about yet is I said that, you know, there's no distance, no time in soul reality, but there is connection. So the way you measure how close you are to somebody else is not in feet, but in connection pieces. And experience is one of those things. Common experiences are one of those things. The more intense the experience is, the bigger the connection is. The more time you spend with somebody working on connections with them, if you meditate with somebody, for example, you're going to make a pretty good connection with them. And these all show up later on in things like, well, you can test this with the sense of being stared at or something like that, right, so that you can say, we have made a better connection than we had before. You can actually see if you've made a better connection or not. Twins, they have the, you know, of all of the life experience that we have, we're closest. Twins are closest. Brothers and sisters are close. Parents and children are close. And there's another aspect to this, of course, that I'd be happy to talk about. It's just reincarnation.
Okay.
So that, you know, I make the assumption that if a couple of souls are going to decide to share a womb with each other, they probably know each other from previous lifetimes.
Okay.
And so not only are we looking at the connections through the current lifetime, but we're looking at the connections through we don't know how many other lifetimes where they have been sharing connections with one another together there too.
Okay, all right. You want to talk a little bit of how you think the energy shifts from person to person?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Well,
it shifts through the chakras, and one of the things you talk about is like when it goes from the same chakra on one person to the same one on another, it works better than going to different chakras.
Oh, you're talking psychology. Sure, I'll talk psychology. healthy stuff. Well, you said, how does it go from one to another? That's like asking how does a photon travel? Well,
right,
you know,
right,
how does
right.
I don't know that. It just does. We can measure we can measure its travel. We can see what it does. But this how stuff, you know, we don't do how very well with anything, any force. So things travel from one to the other, and thoughts, you know, thoughts, sometimes we can read other people's thoughts. Communication is really good. We're good at that. So all this stuff that we're doing now, I'm communicating thoughts with you. I'm communicating feelings with you through my communication chakra. But there are other communications too. I mean, you know, someone walks into a room and we sense them over there. We look at them over there. It's a friend, and, you know, we feel better because they're there. And we sense, you know, we can sense how they're feeling, good or bad, kind of by looking at them. You know, you can say some of that is sensory stuff through the, you know, communication chakra or maybe the mind chakra. But some of it, I think, comes through a heart chakra. And it's amazing. You know, I can tell when a friend walks up to me whether they want something from me or not. And so we're getting stuff from the will chakra with that. So my take on this is it's really good if we communicate from one chakra to another chakra, where they're the same chakra. We communicate mind to mind, heart to heart, communication to communication. Those things are very healthy. I have friends who have been in situations where they have been, you know, really bad parenting. And what happens is the parents try and force with their will either the child to have the desires the parent wants them to have or to love them. And these things are just, it's icky. You know, it's just like, they don't work well. They make people crazy. Probably is a nice word to use there. so you know, one of the things I was kind of pleased with when I put this all together was I could go back to my psychology stuff. I wasn't doing it quite so much as I was going along, but go back and go, oh yeah, I do understand what's going on in some of these relationship situations that I just didn't understand from what I was hearing before. That was kind of the, you know, the, that's the subtitle, a deeper understanding of human relationships.
Yeah. Okay. The mathematical formulas.
Ick. Yeah.
I'm not big on complex math, so I kind of skipped over them. But do you want to explain to people what you're trying to do with them?
Sure. This book was for me and 20 friends. Well, you know, to start with. And I was working really, really hard to understand what was going on. And I needed the, I can wave my hands. A lot of people can always wave their hands and say, oh, it looks like this, it looks like that. You know, all this stuff you're talking about, well, it's just a quantum mechanical effect. But, you know, it's not. You can't just wave your hands and have it be real. So I was trying to see if I could put down some real things people could put in starting conditions, see how well connections were set up right now, run an experiment saying, so yeah, we're gonna have this experience together and we're gonna see if it changes how well we connect with one another. And you have to do that with equations. You need it in there. It's a level of rigor, of getting to a deeper level of understanding that you need to have to be able to figure out if you really do understand what's going on. You got to test it. You got to check it out. You've got to be able to go, yeah, I actually, when I did something, it made a change that I expected it to make. Here's what my equations say it should be like. Here's what happened. Now, I understand you didn't read the equations, so you probably missed the fact that there are constants in there. So I really don't know how big an effect there is if we spend an hour talking on the phone, you know, across the radio waves here about this topic, how much better we'd be at being a sense of being stared at or whatever else, you know, anything you want to do. But I think we can probably figure out what those are if we do the experiments with enough people. Now, so again, the equations were from me.
Okay.
And my half dozen friends that do read equations and said, yeah, that really helped. I understood what you were saying when the equations were there. So for everybody else out there who doesn't like equations, I wrote the book and then I rewrote the book and then I went back a third time to rewrite the book so that you don't need the equations. I say exactly the same thing in the text as I say in the equations. And I did that on purpose so that people could read the book and understand it without having to read those, you know, those horrendous sums and things like that, that I kind of went, yeah, okay, this is going to be interesting. I have two other things to say about this.
Okay.
In publishing, we have a truism that for every equation you put in the book, your sales are cut in half. So I put enough equations in the book that if my sales are cut in half with each one, I'm going to have, they're more than 100. I think they're about 120. I'm going to have more money than there are, you know, atoms in the universe in dollar bills. if I just take the equations out and then put the book out again, and guess what? I'm going to. So that one's going to get called We All Have Souls, and I think I can prove it.
Now, is it going to be the exact same book, or are you writing another book on the same subject?
It's another book on the same subject. I'm actually taking, among other things, I think I'm going to take the book and put the first half as the second half and the second half as the first half. I'm going to talk a lot more about the proofs for the evidence for it, because that's the interesting stuff. I really didn't get very much in calculating soul connections for what I have available. And all the equations are gone. And a lot of the technical stuff, I'm just going to say, no, if you're looking for the technical details, if you're looking to test this out, yeah, go get the other book or talk to me, or we'll work out experiments that really makes sense. But this is information.
Right.
And then I'm hoping to have a series of books. So I get somebody, you know, I don't know who I'm going to do. Well, I'd love to have Rupert Sheldrake do one. Oh. Patrick Harper too. But you know, Rupert Sheldrake goes, yeah, we all have souls. and we think we can prove it, and then it's going to be about morphic resonance.
Nice.
I haven't talked to Rupert about this, and Rupert and I, you know, we differ a little bit. He calls it morphic resonance, and he does not have the idea of energy in it, and I call it life force, and I do have the idea of energy in it, although right. we both have information in it. So, you know, at some point we've got to say, well, gee, let's find a compromise. Let's talk about both. Let's talk about the differences between them, because his evidence is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it is a proof of souls, but he doesn't talk about souls. So, you know, I have to see if he's willing to at least go that far in my direction.
Okay. Is there anything in the book that we haven't covered that you think people should know?
Oh, well, we could talk about my idea of what a chakra is.
Okay. Yeah. Go for it.
We talked about you know the various chakras, but there's some thought about each one.
Mm-hmm.
So there are. I have the thought that there are like 14 characteristics for chakras. What I was really looking at here is connections, and wasn't. As I said earlier, I'm not so much interested in the idea of exactly what a chakra looks like or exactly what a chakra is, but I am very interested in how one connects to another, whether it's within a particular soul or between souls. And so here are the pieces I think you have to be able to understand what's going on in a chakra. We're getting technical here, so you know, cut me off when you get bored with this. So there's some internal stuff. There's the maximum energy a chakra can hold. There's the amount of energy a chakra wants to hold, which is different than how much it can hold. There's how much is in it right now, and there's chakras leak, and there's kind of a goal for where the chakra wants to be. So it. You know, all those pieces kind of fit together to say how much energy or information do I want to have in me. The chakra is saying that, and then the connections outside the soul. There's the ability of the chakra to pull energy in. How much life force the chakra wants to pull in, and then there's how much it intends to pull in. And you asked a question earlier that I didn't answer quite as well as I should have. And here's the answer to it. We have intention for how much life force is transmitted between us. One person intends to send it out, the life force out to another person, and it goes out. And another person intends to accept it or intends to deny it from coming in. And that's how we decide how much energy is transferred, is the interaction between the two people.
Right. And you spent actually a few chapters talking about this.
I did. And it is so much, again, this is a detail kind of thing. It's a connection kind of thing. Boy, you know, it goes, you know, we could spend a long time talking about it or a short time talking about it. But if it's a long time that it gets into a lot of details, and I don't know that...
We're almost out of time, so.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of looking at my clock. So, I don't think it's possible to do it justice as far as all of the details that are going on in all these pieces I'm just talking about. You know, there's a ability. The other piece is inside the soul. There's the ability to how it transfers, how the connections are between the chakras, so they can transfer energy between life force between them.
Okay, all right, and I would recommend people pick up the book if they want to get into the details, because you do go into a lot of detail. And anyone who has had experience with energy, I think it's going to make a lot of sense to.
I'm hoping so. What I'm really trying to do is to create a framework that people can hang their experiences on, where it's not just I had an experience, but we all had this experience, and it fits in. Well, the Reiki guys, you know, they're feeling the energy. There's some will going out to change. I think it's will. I think it's heart too, going out to change the energy of the person they're working with. And so if they can say, yeah, there are souls, there is life force, we do communicate with one another, I feel like I'm doing it this way, there are words to use that will be understandable to a lot of people. And people in martial arts, they can say, yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Those are kind of related. But if you can say the same thing, somebody who says, I've had experience with ghosts, and it hangs on here in this idea of life force, this idea of souls, they all hang together. So the demonstration, the evidence from any one person supports the evidence from another person, even if they're talking about what seem to be completely different experiences.
Right. Okay. And again, the book is Calculating Soul Connections, A Deeper Understanding of Human Relationships. When do you think the next one's going to be out?
I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Next year. I won't make it this year. I work really hard with books, and this one is. If you want to talk about publishing something, we can do that. But this is not the show for that.
Well, tell us a little bit about Pine Winds Press. This is your publishing company.
Yeah, glad to do that. The reason I started Pine Winds Press, the overall company is called Idle Arbor.
Okay.
And we published healthcare books.
Oh.
And I've been doing that since 1990, mostly recreational therapy books and books for activity directors in nursing homes. But I ran across this book called Daemonic Reality.
By Patrick Harper.
Patrick Harper, yes. A truly excellent book. I wish I'd written a book as good as his. Patrick and I have some disagreements on some things, but his book is so good. And it was, I read about it someplace and said, oh, I want a copy of that. And I found a copy in England, used. It wasn't in publication. So I said, oh, wow. How can I get a hold of this guy? Penguin published the book. I wrote to Penguin and said, is this book in print? Are you guys going to print it again? You know, and if not, can you give me a contact for Patrick Harper? They did. They gave me a contact for Patrick Harper. I emailed or wrote a letter. I think I should use snail mail because I think that's the contact they had, and said, Patrick, how would you like to have your book put out in an American edition? And he said, sure. And he said he wanted an advance, which I usually don't do. And I know how he used the advance. He rethatched his roof. Wasn't that great?
Nice.
So I not only did I get a really great book, but I managed to rethatch Patrick Harper's roof in the process. And as I was going through the book, you know, there were some pictures in the original book. You can't use pictures from another book because, you know, the pictures are copyright and all the rest.
Right.
So I was looking around for good pictures, and I came across Janet Board's website. You know Janet Board?
No.
Oh, you don't? Oh, Bigfoot Casebook, among other things. And a whole bunch of books on fairies and stone circles in England.
Oh.
They're wonderful books. Her book was out of print. So I said, wow, Janet. Actually, Janet and Colin work together. They're, you know, husband and wife. And I said, Janet, would you like to do an updated version of Bigfoot Casebook? So that was the second one. And strange enough, after that, people with Bigfoot books came and tried and found me and said, I've got a Bigfoot book. Would you like to publish it?
Nice.
So that was that. I didn't intend in the beginning to have, you know, all Bigfoot books because I started with Patrick Harper's. I was interested in Daemonic Reality or something like that.
Yeah.
So now I've got, you know, I've got that. I've got a book on Subconscious Divine in Me, which is about healing. Two books now about Lessons of the Inca Shaman, which are excellent books. About if you're curious at all and want to, you know, understand the what the Incas were doing and are still doing about healing themselves and the earth, and you want to hear about, you know, we haven't even talked about fairies. I mean, someday maybe we can do that. But they have a thing called Apus, which are spirits of the mountains down there, and the shamans bring the spirits in, and the spirits actually talk to the people who are students of the shamans, and there's a lot of that in the books.
Hmm.
So, right. You know.
Well, where can people find the company online?
Pinewindspress.com.
Okay. All right. And yeah, hopefully we'll have you back again, maybe when your next book comes out, maybe before. Talk about other stuff. Who knows?
Yeah, I'd love to I'd love to talk with you and have three or four other guests on, and we can all talk about how all their stuff fits into, you know, this model of mine. And you know, they'll do the most of the talking, but I'll be happy to say, oh, I think I can fit that in here. Then you can talk about something interesting with them.
That's not a bad idea. And if anyone's interested, we did interview Patrick Harper back last July. You can find that in the archive.
It's a great interview.
Oh, thank you. I was really happy with it. I was just thrilled to be able to get a hold of him.
Yeah. No, he's terrific. He's well worth listening to.
All right. Well, we're going to take you out with some Psyche Corporation singing about the mathematics of the universe. The Last Exit for the Lost is up next. Thank you, Tom.
All right. Thank you.
Come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection? Singing, soaking into our transmission. 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Of the universe, ventricles and tetrahead, chambers number 1597, and counting.